Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Finn, and we got a pretty packed studio. It's going to be a good show today. Later on in the show, we're going to be talking with Patrick Millsaps. He's an attorney, and he's also with Hall Booth Smith PC, so he's also a talent manager. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, we're going to be talking with Charlie Crawford, the CEO of the Private Bank of Buckhead. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kevin. Thank you.
So how does one become a CEO of a bank?
Well, you start your own bank, and then you get to pick your title. How about that?
Exactly.
I've been in the industry for almost 30 years, and every opportunity I've had, I've moved down the food chain closer to a startup. So,
definitely. So you finally said, I can do this better. I'm going to go jump out and be an entrepreneur and do this on my own.
I did. And when you say on my own, it takes a village, as they say. So when I organized the bank, I asked 11 other organizing directors to assist in the formation and the regulatory filings and the capital raising. Takes a team of employees to make it work. So it's a group effort.
All right. Well, so just walk me through the process and why you guys decided to create the bank and what purpose it was going to serve.
Sure. We saw a need in the Atlanta market for a business private bank that was fanatical about service. And I've been in the banking community here in Atlanta a long time and had the pleasure of serving many of the same customers through several different institutions, and it's, to me, a great opportunity to take a blank sheet of paper, and if there are any problems, are the ones you created, not somebody else, and how can you really take care of your customer at the same time, stay within the regulatory framework, and provide a good return to your investors?
Well, definitely. I think other bigger banks have got away from that, and it is all about the relationship, and it's a really intimate subject when it comes to people's money, and people really care about it, and they really want help with it.
That's well said, Kevin. And for us, our clients tend to bank with the banker, not the institution. And the relationships we have are very personal. We're out in the community. We see them in the grocery store and restaurants and churches and along the way. And we like that. And our customers respond well to that model.
All right. Well, how long have you guys been around?
We are in our eighth year. We started the bank in December of 2006. We opened to the public.
All right. And what kind of growth have you guys seen in those 8 years?
Well, Kevin, when we started, we had three objectives, and one was growth, one was quality, and one was profitability. So thank goodness we haven't been the fastest-growing bank in Atlanta in 8 years, because with what happened in the economy and the banking community, we wouldn't be around. So we started with the 9 employees, as I said. Today we've got a little over 60. Assets is something that the industry measures. We're a little over $200 million in assets, and maybe the most important thing, we've done so with good quality, and the bank's been profitable the last 5 years after our startup.
Well, let's talk about it. You've been talking about quality and community. What are you guys really doing to sort of just do that to your best ability?
Well, really a fabric of the community. So all of our customers are Atlanta-based, privately owned companies, entrepreneurs, professionals. Our marketing material says discerning individuals. Inside the bank, we say high-maintenance people. We're looking for a relationship where the customer really values the service. And if they're happy with just an 800 number and internet click, they'd probably find at any institution. So we're forever out cultivating with people like Patrick, the legal community, the accounting community, investment community. All of those clients look like clients that we think we could take good care of from a banking side.
Definitely. Do you guys work any way with like small business and helping small businesses grow? Is that one of your niches?
It is. We're what's called a preferred lender for the SBA, the Government Guaranteed Program. We've received that status about 5 years ago. And so a lot of what we do centers around in the small business. And what helps, Kevin, is we're a small business. So we think the way the entrepreneur, and we can identify what it means to grow and meet payroll and the other challenges associated with a small business.
How have you guys been getting the word out and growing? Obviously, I can tell that you're organically, people probably resonate with your message and they like what you guys are doing and how you guys help out in the community. But what else have you been doing really to get the word out?
I'm sure this morning will be the best way we've done it is by radio. Most of our growth does come by way of referral. It's a current customer happy with our service. It's an employee that is out talking to the community. We've got an active board of directors. We've got board of advisors in two different communities. So almost all of it has been by way of referral and organic growth.
All right. Well, walk me through, you're getting a new client, and just walk me through the experience of banking with you guys that's different and the level of services above other banks and what you guys do.
Sure. Maybe I'll use a live example from yesterday. And this is typical. A female attorney had an appointment with us. She came to the bank because she already knew one of our relationship managers that works at the bank, and she had had a great experience over the last decade. And that gets back to my point about the customer banks with the banker. My job as the CEO of the bank, frankly, is to provide an atmosphere and environment that our relationship managers can take good care of their customers. My role hasn't been to kick people in the behind. It's to remove any obstacles from them taking good care. So this lady came in. She wanted to physically come in at least once. And I say that because most of our clients don't find a need on a regular basis to come to the bank. Mm-hmm. We tend to go to them and find ways to deliver the bank to them with technology services. So this particular lady will open her law firm deposit accounts with us. She's got a credit line that she likes to smooth out cash flow. So we can help her on both sides of the balance sheet.
Okay. So you just mentioned technology. How have you guys really been keeping up with it? Because it's moving so fast. There's things that look like they might be trends and everything. Are you guys chasing each one of those, or are you taking really of a direct approach with technology?
The answer for us has been to listen to our clients and what they want. And when we first opened the bank in 2006, there was technology available for businesses to scan their checks and deposits without having to come to the bank. Going back a decade ago, we used to send couriers to our business customers' offices. Well, we didn't need to do that anymore because of the technology advancement. About 3 years ago, the technology became available for the consumer to use their smartphone. And so we've got a Private Bank of Buckhead app that sits on your smartphone, lets you take a picture of the front and the back of the check and remotely deposit that. And there's lots of ways you can get money out of the bank. You know, the ATM network, the way we do it with our clients is they can use anybody's machine around the world, and when it pops up that there's going to be a nuisance fee of $2, $3, or $4 at that terminal, our clients never pay that. We pick up the tab for that.
And really?
Yeah, it works economically much better for us. We don't own any of those machines or lease any of them. We use the network, and our clients love that they don't have to go hunt down a particular bank ATM. They can use anybody's that's out there.
Well, it seems like such a small thing, but having that kind of peace of mind that your client doesn't have to worry about that and deal with those minor fees that really are an annoyance, that's huge right there.
Yeah, and that's an example of listening to the client, because we didn't sit in a conference room and come up with that on our own. We heard customers complain that they didn't like to get nickel and dime, and you know, that's a nuisance fee that isn't very attractive to anybody.
So how are you guys getting out in the community and sort of getting to talk to the people and finding out what they want?
Well, it's nice with 60 bankers out there. We're all very involved in the community. We may be volunteering in civic organizations or serving on nonprofit boards and listening to what the customers want. In advisory capacities, we work with the local colleges and institutions. We do a lot of surveying of our customers and prospective customers, again, to hear what it is they're looking for in the bank. And one thing we do, we're forever surveying our customers, and consistently, the top three things that they come back and tell us that they value is, number one is always service and the relationship. Number two is the technology. And number three, I wouldn't have thought of when we started the bank, but it's our safety and soundness. Being a healthy financial institution, people didn't used to worry about that. Now they want to know that the company and the bank they're dealing with on the other side is a healthy organization that will be around to take care of them.
Definitely. So what's coming next for you guys? You guys just celebrated a 7-year anniversary, and that's pretty huge, especially I imagine starting a bank is a harder company to start than most.
It does take a lot to start it, and every anniversary is a good anniversary. Seven-year anniversary was a particular milestone for us. In our industry, there's something called a de novo bank, Latin of new, and the definition used to be a startup bank 3 years old or less. And when the economy fell into hard times, the banking industry struggled, the regulatory definition got extended from 3 years to 7 years. And so December 11th last year, we graduated the baby de novo status, as they say. And
you're a big boy bank
I guess we're a big boy and an adolescent. But what's nice is it it allows us to execute some business decisions, and if we need regulatory approval, it's a more expedited basis once you're out of de novo status.
Well, definitely, because you guys have proven that you guys are serious and that you guys are reliable.
Yes, and fair enough. We need to establish that track record to be able to operate the way we do.
So you guys just recently, I've seen there's something called the Private Bank of Decatur. Is that a branch of you guys? Is that what's been opening up, or is that part of your growth?
It is part of our growth, and we opened about 16 months ago in the Decatur community. We love that market, and the reason we're there, and this is the way we grow, is because we identified a terrific lady, Judy Turner, who was CEO of her own bank in Decatur for many, many years, and Judy knows everybody from the janitor to the mayor and in between in that market. So we decided what would be best in Decatur was to do a trade name. So we're called Private Bank of Decatur over there, and the folks that are located in that office live in that community and serve that community. And that's been a nice expansion for the bank.
Definitely. Well, it seems like you guys are taking this this sort of hyper-local approach and like brand it to Decatur or Buckhead, and that makes it sort of a very communal thing, like for a community.
That's what we've heard from our customers. They want to sit down or talk on the phone or by email or text with somebody who's empowered to make decisions that's local. They don't want to be talking to a call center in another country or frankly, somebody in Charlotte or San Francisco. That they want to know that the people that we can't say yes to everything, but whatever the request is, it's local decision-making authority, and the customers like that fact.
So is the Private Bank of Decatur, it sort of has its own arms and legs and makes decisions and stays in that community, and it's sort of separate even though it's part of your entity, but it's focused in that hyper-local market?
Yeah, to me it's the best of both worlds in that our regulatory charter and holding company in Buckhead sits behind the scenes of Private Bank of Decatur, and so we're there to support what their needs are. But where it touches the customer, it's all Decatur-centric. And that's the way I think the folks in Decatur want it and like it.
Well, definitely, because you have to think Decatur has its own community, its own lifeblood, its own even restaurants. And just having someone that's there and that sort of understands how everything works together, that's a huge thing, especially in a bank. You would never expect that.
Nope. I admire that's what the local businesses in Decatur, and it's not just Decatur. I think if we expand again geographically into Cobb or Gwinnett, they would want the same thing. They want the name of their community on the bank. They want the people that are running the bank and making the decisions to be local in their market.
So why did you guys decide on the word private? What was the decision there?
We get asked that a lot. I appreciate you asking the question. Every bank around the country that I know of has a private banking department. And to us, it's not a department or a type of customer. It's a service philosophy. And our expectation is that we will deliver private banking type service to all customers, whether that's an individual, a business, or a nonprofit. And they should expect that level of service regardless of their classification. A couple other reasons we picked it. We are a private company. We have less than 100 investors that capitalized the bank, and all of our businesses are private. With our size, we're not providing services, as you might imagine, to Coca-Cola or Georgia Pacific. These are locally owned businesses here in Atlanta that the private part has resonated well. But we tell that story a lot because I think at times some folks think that can be exclusive, and we don't intend for that to be. We're a full-service FDIC-insured community bank that's out there to serve everybody. But all the people we serve, we want them to know they should expect that private banking level service that some institutions reserve for just a select few.
I love that because normally when people think of banks, they have a negative connotation, the big bank and everything. You guys have sort of broken that down. It's got to be fun waking up in the morning knowing that you're serving the community and you're actually helping people, and people like you guys. They want to come and they enjoy banking.
That's what motivates me, and that's what motivates our team. I mean, we have words like passionate and fanatical, and it's all about the customer. And certainly we have to operate with regulatory guidelines and policies and procedures, but we start and finish with what's good for the customer.
Definitely. So what's next for you? What do you guys need more of? Do you need more businesses, or because you're moving out to Gwinnett, you need more companies from Gwinnett to show interest or investors? How can we help you?
Well, Kevin, we grow every day, which is nice. Our most recent initiative, we've been in the mortgage business for the last 3 years, but we've just invested significantly in a new team of people that joined us the end of last year and the beginning of this year. And we see a real need with all the regulatory changes in the mortgage industry for customers, prospects, to have a very good mortgage representative walking them through the process and taking care of them. You know, the bank is we're well capitalized. We're not looking for new capital. We're always looking for new customers, certainly, that we can help. And it may be a depository need. It may be a lending need. Or ideally, we may be able to help them with both.
Definitely. Well, I know a lot of banks promise a lot of things about they have a mortgage division, everything. But what are you guys doing in that? But you just mentioned it to sort of separate yourself there. What do you guys do differently?
Yeah, well, I'll bet you'll like this, Kevin, because we've got somewhat of a unique model with this new team. The team that joined us has been doing mortgage originations for over a dozen years with a couple different companies unaffiliated with the bank. And the way they've driven their opportunity is through radio media. So you will hear us on the air here in Atlanta, up in the Boston market, and soon in Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, talking about really testimonials of mortgage customers that we've been able to help with different products and services through our mortgage arm. And that has generated a lot of interest. At the end of the day, it's still a relationship, and whether it's by phone or meeting in person, that's what separates us. But the lead generation is coming through radio media.
I absolutely love that. Well, anything we can do to help out with that, we'd be glad to do it here in these local markets. Sure. We have studios all over.
Beautiful. Thank
you. So I absolutely love it. You're so forward-thinking with the way you guys do banking. You took something that's such an old industry, you took a forward-thinking approach, and you're sort of just tackling and changing how things are done. And I'm hoping that maybe more banks will take from you and do this more hyper-local thing and break it back down.
Well, it's interesting. Our model's not for everybody, but there are about 6,000 banks across the country, and most, in terms of quantity of banks, are like us. They're smaller community banks. We do have probably 20 large financial institutions that control the bulk of the banking assets in the country. About 80% of them are sitting at a big bank, but for the client that's looking for the high-level service, the community banking model has resonated well.
Okay. Well, how do our listeners reach out, learn more, and find out where these banks are?
Oh, these days, the web's a pretty good place to start. You know, we're out there at privatebankofbuckhead.com, privatebankofdecatur.com, Private Mortgage Solutions. Our direct telephone number is 404-264-7979, and we'd be delighted to start a conversation.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on. How about you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, he's been sitting there patiently taking notes, giving scores, and making funny faces. But we got Patrick Millsaps up. He's an attorney and talent manager. Very interesting duo. And he's with Hall Booth Smith. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about Hall Booth Smith. That's the more talent arm, right?
No, that's the law firm.
That's your law firm?
That's my real job.
Oh, that's your real job.
That's what pays the bills, yeah.
Definitely. Well, tell me, how do you go from being I saw on your thing it says country lawyer. Yeah. How do you go from being a country lawyer to a talent manager? Does they think like they're a complete 180?
Yeah, well, Hall Booth is an Atlanta-based firm. We've got locations in Nashville and Charleston and then all throughout Georgia, and that's how I came to the firm. I actually live in South Georgia because I don't like traffic, and Snowmageddon just proved my point. So when I was not in traffic, I was kind of laughing. But Hall Booth is very entrepreneurial, and they let us look and do other things. And in 2011, through a very weird set of circumstances, I became Newt Gingrich's chief of staff on his presidential campaign.
Wow.
Which was not a planned thing, but it happened.
And, just happened. You were just in a bar, and you're like, hey, Newt, what's up?
It's sort of not. But after that was over, I went back home, and obviously Mitt Romney was the presidential candidate. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you remember this, but Stacey Dash, the who played Dion in the movie Clueless, tweeted that she supported Mitt Romney.
Okay.
Well, apparently black actresses in Hollywood can't tweet support of a Republican.
Republican? That's a no-no?
That it made news. I didn't know Stacey. Stacey didn't know me, but I watched that her one tweet became a huge news story. And the campaign really didn't do much with her after that. She did a Piers Morgan interview, and then that was it. So after the campaign, I'm a letter writer. I know people don't remember this, but people used to have paper and stamps. I still use that.
I've written like seven of those, so.
I literally just out of the blue, sent Stacey a letter that said, hey, if you want to try politics for real, I had a unique experience at it, so let me know. Well, next thing I know, Stacey Dash Hollywood actress emails me, and I'm, you know, honey, the girl from Clueless just sent me an email. And we talked on the phone and looked at some opportunities, and then I had an opportunity to go out to L.A. I was invited to go to the Republican National Committee meeting. I'd never been to one of those before. And I called her and I said, I'm going to be out in town. We had lunch. And then we went to the Republican committee meeting together. Mm-hmm. At that point, I didn't see a lot of opportunities for Stacey
in that
realm. I mean, there would be a lot of people that wanted to interview her and get her to talk about politics. But she's a working actress, and I was more concerned about her making money. So I was out there, and we started talking about some of the roles. I think she had her agent at the time was sending her some just weird stuff. And again, I'm not a Hollywood expert. I'm an end user.
But you actually cared, though.
So she asked me, she said, what do you think about this? I said, this is the silliest thing I've ever seen. And she said, well, I really need to fire the guy, but I don't know how. He said, so I just said, I'll do it. And so I fired her agent for her. The next thing we did was, I went back out. She was pitching a TV show, that she had co-written, and they were having problems with going to studios and selling the show.
Yeah.
And, she called me and she said, we're having problems with selling the show. And I'd have never sold a show,
but I talk to people.
I do jury trials and I do try to sell things. And so I went back out, met with her team, actually met the guy that was Larry David's producer, met some really cool people and talked to them about their pitch. And they said, Patrick, you need to come with us on these pitches. And I'm like, okay. So here, the next thing I know, I'm in with Larry David's producer meeting with the head of, I believe it was Cinemax, pitching a TV show. Okay. And the show, while the show didn't go anywhere, me and the head of Cinemax hit it off.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're not used to my accent. And the next thing, Stacey literally at that point said, you're my manager. And I had to Google what manager meant. And now, almost a year later, I have 12 clients that I manage on a regular basis in Hollywood. So that's there's a lot of –
I absolutely love that. The thing I keep on, it's like when you're sitting here and you're in the South and someone has a British accent, it's like, well, I trust this person more. So you're out in California at the Southern accent, they're like, well, this guy, he must be a great guy.
There are times I've actually thickened it. I become Patrick Gump in some meetings.
So you have all these people, these clients in California now,
yeah.
And you must love that the Georgia film industry is just sort of starting to bloom here.
The Georgia film industry is actually what got me interested. I don't think I'd have ever sent Stacey the letter. When I was in law school, I finished up in 2000. They were filming the movie Road Trip in Athens.
Okay.
The guy that actually – the director of Hangover, Road Trip was his first movie. A friend of mine – we had class canceled, and a friend of mine said, hey, I'm going down here to these open auditions. And I said, okay. Apparently, I make a lot of decisions like that. I just say, okay.
I love that. That's
great. And we go down, and they there's people with 8x10 glossies, and these are people clearly want to be in the movies. And we didn't have a picture. And so we were about to leave, and a casting director said, no, will y'all just get a snapshot? We need normal college-looking people. And this was about 40 pounds ago for me. And I was cast as a cop in Road Trip. I'm in it for like 8 seconds. That was about, but what I saw, what everybody else was looking at the stars, and I saw that Athens was completely booked in hotel rooms with crew, with all these people spending money. And I said, when Athens non-football season, and it was like a football weekend,
mm-hmm.
and this was for a month. And so that's how I was introduced to this is an amazing economic development engine, because these people come in, they spend money, and then they leave. So there's no really infrastructure you have to build. There's not a lot of – so that was the first kind of taste of it. And then later when I was in Marietta practicing, I met a working actor there and helped a group called Georgia Production Partnership get the first tax credits passed in Georgia. Governor Perdue wasn't a fan of them. He didn't know how – they were kind of a mystery at that point. And I told them, I said, you're not using your strength. And they said, what's that? I said, y'all know celebrities. So we got Jeff Foxworthy down to the Capitol, and next thing we know, we had tax credits. That was the beginning of that.
I love that. You're like, Neil, you saw the code, and you're like, well, this is a money we're missing out on. You guys got to take advantage of
it. It's free money. I mean, it is an amazing amount of money. And now, you know, 14 years later, I mean, Pinewood Studios out of London, which was where the original Star Wars was filmed, mm-hmm. I think they're investing $150 million in a new facility that I went to their grand opening. And they're going to be filming Marvel's next movie there next year.
Okay. So what do you think Georgia's growing with this? Is this going to be a trend in Georgia, or do you think we're going to just really revamp it and keep it going?
As long as Georgia stays innovative on its tax credits. We have a very good tax credit
mm-hmm.
system.
Yeah, definitely.
But all the states around us are competing for those dollars. So as long as we stay competitive in terms of maybe making it less movie production companies now look at the tax credits as part of their budget. And so if you have a $2 million budget, they actually will reduce it by the tax credits. So we just need to make sure that we're making it very easy for the studios to get those dollars back, because those dollars are going to be respent in the community.
All right. So are you really buckling down? Are you going to be a talent agent? Is that a side hobby? Are you like, no, I'm a lawyer? How do you really define yourself?
It's now about 60-40. I really enjoy – I've got a Hall Booth. We are joint venturing with a full-time manager on the ground in L.A., mm-hmm. And so we have a presence there. And what that has done is that Georgia is producing a lot of actors through Tyler Perry Studios and others. I just picked up another client that's on Cinemax, has a hit show called Banshee right now.
Yeah.
Two of the stars of that are from Georgia. One's from Savannah and one's from Atlanta. And so the fact that we have a base in Atlanta where the things are actually being filmed, and we have a partner in L.A. where these jobs are being booked, you know, we're going to see where it goes, because this is it's a fascinating industry. Hollywood, I think, is the Wild West again, because nobody knows what the next thing is going to mm-hmm. be. Nobody wants to watch. Nobody waits around for Tuesday night at 8:30 anymore to watch a 30-minute show.
Not at all.
We all have it on iPads, or we DVR it, and so the distribution mechanism of
well, just the marketing,
this
the money,
product, yeah.
Where the money's coming from is really changing. They need to find a new, adapt the model really to the consumer.
And they're inventing it every day. I mean, it is. I mean, Amazon is putting up pilots and letting people vote on which shows they want to see produced. Netflix obviously
releases their whole series at once.
Well, House of Cards really legitimized that thing, because nobody knew what House of Cards was until it won an award. And so it's the new normal. And so you have a lot of brick and mortar studios that are trying to figure out what's next.
All right. Well, I have to think that being a lawyer has really helped you out with. Does it give that credibility? And you also, since you know you can research legal things for your clients, has it really helped you there?
Well, I'm not a California lawyer. I always have to make that very clear to them.
Being
a transactional lawyer and a trial lawyer, I'm always about the big picture. And that's what a manager does. There's two people that are always in actors' lives. They're the agents that are booking the jobs next. And then there's the manager that's looking at the big picture branding. And mm-hmm. that's what I did. That's what I did for Newt. And I see what I do for these people as kind of I'm running their individual campaigns.
Okay.
How do I make their career ongoing?
Well, tell us a little bit. You can get the word out a little bit about 12 people that you're actually.
Well, Stacey Dash, and then I brought my list. Chelsea Cardwell and Stephanie Northrup are both on Banshee.
Okay, Stephanie Northrup, I think I did an independent film with her. I think it was the 12 Lives of Sissy Carlisle.
Yeah,
she was in that.
That's right.
Yeah, so I met her. That was on that crew and cast.
And then a couple of people down in Savannah, which I just read this morning, Chip Lane and Angelique Chase, they are independent filmmakers, but they were also involved. I don't know if y'all heard the story, but the lawyer in Savannah that had the most famous, he bought during the Super Bowl, they have local ads during the halftime. He bought the 2 minutes in the Savannah market, and he made the craziest law firm commercial you have ever seen.
Was that the Rock one? Or?
It was about his brother dying, and he had flaming sledgehammers.
Yeah,
and it got 5 million. Both Angelique and Chip were involved in the production. In fact, Chip plays the cop in this thing. Had 5 million YouTube hits, and the lawyer just got picked up to star in his own reality show.
Again, hyper local. He didn't spend that much money on
it. It was a 2 minute Savannah commercial, and they now say it was the most watched commercial during the Super Bowl because it went viral.
Yep.
And so that's about their distribution mechanism there. All the people that paid $4 million for a 30-second ad on the Super Bowl, and this lawyer down in Savannah who got the most coverage, that's how quick we can deliver content now.
Wow. All right, speaking of that and new media and stuff, let's talk social media. Mm-hmm. How social media really changed the industry. And I know you're a big Twitterer, right? I mean, you have over 60,000 followers. That's pretty huge.
I didn't have a Twitter handle when I started the political campaign, when I started with Newt. And for me, initially, it was how I got real-time news. I mean, I could literally follow the reporters that were following our candidates, was following Newt, and they would be tweeting real-time, so I would have a real-time reaction of speeches. With Hollywood now, with the people I represent, and they're just now realizing this, Twitter, those followers are their assets. I mean, mm-hmm, when you have so much content out there, every one of my clients, I try to get on a Twitter regimen because those are people that they can promote their own stuff to. There's two people that I do legal work for that's on the Heart of Dixie on the CW.
Mm-hmm.
They started just live tweeting during the show, and they increase their followers a couple of hundred every week. And then
wow.
that's their assets.
You know,
usually these actors will go on a TV show, and they even have to turn their costumes back in. They don't take anything with them other than the paycheck, right? Now, with social media, I'm trying to get them to grow their social media presence because that's their own constituency. So when they go to the next show, they can use that to and producers and advertisers are now looking at that when they're casting people. How many Twitter followers do you have?
Definitely. Well, I noticed this, and it really hit me. It was last month. I was at Lenox Mall, and there was 1,500, like 7 to 13 year old girls, and they were all there to see a YouTube star that she gave shopping advice on YouTube. And these people waited in line, I read later, for like 6-7 hours just to meet her and see that. And that to me, just media is changing completely, and it's exciting and it's a little scary, and people just need to keep up with it.
Well, that's how a redneck like me can actually act like I know what I'm doing, because anybody that says I know what's going to happen next year is lying to you, because they don't. So I'm the guy that always runs into the burning building, or like we've established, I'll do it.
Well, you try it, and then if it doesn't work, you pivot on it. I mean, in business, you learn more from your mistakes than you do from your successes.
Well, my wife and my partners at Hall Booth are very patient with me saying, "Hey, let me go try this now." And they're, you know, that's the benefit of being a very entrepreneurial firm, to let me go try these things and potentially grow a business out of it.
All right, definitely. Well, what does Hall Booth need more of, and what does your talent agency need more of? We want to get the word out about both of them.
Well, not an agent. Remember, we've got to be very careful.
Okay.
I'm a manager. Agents
manager.
Are very particular about agency. You can find us at hallboothsmith.com, and we're a full-service law firm. So we can handle everything start to finish. And then, you know, on the management side, we, you know, if you're an actor that needs a bigger picture, you know, look me up and we'll see if we can help. I'm still learning this as I go. I've never gotten so many clients by starting by saying, "I'm still figuring this out." And they're like, "Okay,
well,
let's figure it out together."
The honesty thing of it and saying, "Well, I don't really know how to do this, but I'll figure out how to do it." That goes a long way than trying to BS what you know.
Try that with banking. there's certain industries that would not work. You know, we're trying to figure this out with your money. No, but it seems to be in this in this environment, it's worked so far.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for being on and enlightening us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, this is Kevin Finn for all our guests today and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Atlanta Business Radio.